standing with scripts in hand in front of old microphones. They'll recreate the 1947 broadcast of Lux Radio Theater's It's a Wonderful Life, including the commercials and announcements. Again, that's It's a Wonderful Life on Saturday, December 7th from 8 to 10:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. Again, that's It's a Wonderful Life on Saturday, December 7th from 8 to 10:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 3rd Annual Northwest Quartet Fest on Saturday, December 7th from noon to 8 p.m. at Kennedy Violins in Vancouver, Washington. The Northwest Quartet Fest is a benefit to raise money for local school music programs. There will be raffles, food, an instrument petting zoo, and live music by local student and professional musicians playing genres from classical to Irish to jazz to rock. Again, that's the 3rd Annual Northwest Quartet Fest on Saturday, December 7th from noon to 8 p.m. at Kennedy Violins, 508 Southeast 117th Avenue in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Dandy Warhols playing at McMenamin's Crystal Ballroom on Saturday, December 7th. All ages are welcome. More information is available at crystalballroompdx.com.
If I stay too close to the edge, I will lose control. Pull me in so I can't set forth. I'm not home yet, so I'm still going for gold. I look at it like this.
Hello, KBOO listeners. Thank you for tuning in to our special programming for Genocide Cover-Up Day. As part of the programming, we are airing an interview that I conducted with Robert Franklin. Robert is Dene and was born in Provo, Utah. Later graduated from Northern Arizona University in 2017, where he majored in visual communication with an emphasis in graphic design and minored in advertising. Currently, Robert is serving PSU as the Native American Student and Community Center Manager, where he works with students, the PSU community, the general Portland community, and the indigenous communities in the Pacific Northwest. I had a chance to speak with Robert about all sorts of things, ranging from his life on the reservation, off the reservation, his current work at PSU, and we'll even hear some advice that Robert has to upcoming youths that are interested in going to college. I'd like to thank Robert again for agreeing to speak with me. And if anyone is interested in the services that the center offers, please feel free to go online and check it out. Again, that's a Native American Student and Community Center. Thank you so much.
My name is Robert Franklin. I am Dene, or as I guess we and our government call us, Navajo, from Arizona, from Cameron, Arizona. I am the manager of the Native American Student and Community Center over at Portland State University. I've been there for about 2 years, a little over 2 years now. I graduated from Northern Arizona University, visual communications, emphasis in graphic design, and a minor in advertising. Before here, I was in marketing and working for a ski resort in Arizona.
Oh, so you really transformed from the marketing side to like the community side?
Yeah, well, I've always been a fan of the community. I was born off the reservation, so I was born in Provo, Utah, and I grew up there. And then my family moved us back to the reservation, so Tuba City and Cameron. And it wasn't until I was in Cameron that I really got to be part of the community there. I worked at a gas station, and I got to know the community.
Yeah,
day in and day out, everything that goes on. And it was amazing. We got to participate in community building events. We organized Halo tournaments. it was amazing because you would see all these kids and families bringing out their TVs and Xboxes, and we would network everything together in the community center, and they would just play all day long. It was a lot of fun. So my mom was very much part of the community out there, and she made sure that she included us or got us to participate and volunteer and as many as she felt that we could be a part of. So it was a lot of fun. And so after that.
How old were you when you moved to the back to the reservation?
Back to the res, I was sophomore.
Oh, so you were
sophomore in high school.
What was that transition like?
It was crazy. Yeah. Growing up in Provo, it's a lot of white people. And then going to the reservation, it was a lot of brown people.
Mm.
And I was still, it took a while. I definitely felt like the black sheep, even in my own community, and get to know people. Because I didn't speak my own language. I didn't know my culture all that well. I was aware of it, and I went to family reunions and stuff. But everyone around me spoke Navajo, and I didn't know, like, the cultural, I don't know, norms.
Yeah, like the nuances.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, they all knew, the daily part of life where you're helping out your family and, like, hauling wood, hauling water. And I didn't get to know that and stuff until we actually moved to Cameron, Arizona. And that was, like, my family's, my mom's side of the family's land area.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't any running water or electricity. And so we definitely had to haul water and have a generator to generate electricity. And a lot of chores.
Yeah, just daily, just trying, you know, just to make the day go.
Yeah, but not only that, I got to see the other side of it where that community, my family, my mom, my aunts, my uncles, they were all pushing to get running water, to get electricity. So now my mom has a nice solar panel on the back of her building. They have running water. So it's really cool to see that kind of infrastructure start to come up. And it was just because they didn't take no for an answer.
Good.
Yeah, no, it was really cool. Yeah. I credit a lot of my, perseverance and understanding to my parents because they went through a lot. I definitely benefit from it.
Mm.
Yeah.
That must be very proud with all your accomplishments.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so.
Yeah.
I definitely try to make them proud as much as possible, but I know that we do rub against each other. There's a lot of static there sometimes since both my parents are pretty devout LDS Mormon.
Oh, okay.
So I stopped going to church when I was like 12, 13, somewhere around there. So there's some pushback, and there's some stuff that they probably wish I would have done, but I didn't. But they still love me.
Of course,
they still support the heck out of me. We love each other. We still talk now today, just talking about Native issues in general and stuff going on back home. We find ourselves a lot more just having conversations, really good conversations about stuff versus getting into whatever arguments from the past about just me doing my own thing. And
well, it's like on the next level of talking. It's not even, you know, parents. It's like as peers, it's just another person going through the struggle.
Yeah, it's nice. Whether they admit it or not, they're kind of like treating me like an adult.
Oh.
I think they still see me as like their kid, you know? I mean,
that's
never going to go away, and I totally understand that. But it's nice to have a conversation with them on the same level. Like, is it like a peer, somebody in the community doing something, and they're doing stuff and just sharing information?
Mm.
It's a cool dynamic that I'm starting to become aware of.
Yeah. And or have they visited the cultural center yet?
Yeah.
How'd they respond to it?
They loved it. They came up last year around Christmas during the holidays and came over to the center, and I showed them around and gave them the tour and everything, and they were really impressed. They thought that was really cool to have that for the students at PSU to be able to go to and feel a part of that community.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool. I got a kick out of seeing them kind of nerd out a little bit. There was funny. In our building, we have a lot of art that was donated from the community when the building, the first couple of years of the building. It's still today, people still donate stuff. But one of the items that someone donated was a Navajo rug. And it was made from a weaver, a Navajo weaver from Cameron, Arizona. Mm. So we knew who that person was. Shout out to Gene Man. There's a little tag in there. And my mom was like, oh, hey, this is Gene's rug. Oh, my gosh, it's really cool. I was like, yeah. I was hoping you'd spot that. Yeah, because I totally forgot about it. But
that's beautiful.
My mom found it. Yeah, she loved it.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So nice. And so how long is the cultural center? Is that a community center, a cultural center? What do you...
Well, that's one of the weird dynamics. No, not weird, just interesting dynamics of that building. So the story, 2003, even before 2003, the community had, community and students wanted a place for the Native American, Alaskan Native students to have a place to go. There was a lack of that space. Mm-hmm. Before, I think they were meeting in like a basement room in the Smith Student Union. And so there was a plan to have a building or some space in Portland. There was already that conversation kind of happening. And from what I saw in the notes and what people have told me, that location was supposed to be out somewhere in Delta Park. But it didn't pan out as they wanted. So they ended up finding a place after the students, USHI, the United Indigenous Students in Higher Education, kind of got together and talked to PSU, and they started just having more conversations. NACA, Native American Community Advisory, I think is what they were called.
Is that like a national one, or is that?
No, I think it's pretty local.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a local thing. If I remember correctly, I could be wrong. But they got together, they started organizing, getting the word out. They got a big chunk of money to get the ball rolling from Jean Vollum. She's a big name here in a tech industry, person. I think she recently passed away. She started with a big donation, and then after that started to gain momentum. Mm. They started finding more money and more grants and more people who wanted to be a part of it. So it all kind of took off from there. And then 2003 was the day that it was like opened, it was built, it was done. It kind of fills an important part, especially very important for the students and the community. So it's part community center, part student center, and it's a very unique balance to do, because back then it was definitely more of a community. There was definitely more of a community presence. And then over time, things started changing, either with the president, because at first the building used to have an advisory board that would report directly to the president. And then I guess that was President Bernstein, then the next president was Vim Wiewel, and then he just kind of, that didn't happen. So that went away, and then with that, the community input went away a little bit.
Interesting.
And then bit by bit over the years, it started changing a little bit.
It's like a natural evolution?
Yeah, I think it's a part evolution, part just kind of the person who ran the place was doing all, like everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much support they had officially, but they were doing everything. That someone can only do that for so long.
Yeah.
And then it kind of turned into more of a professional office. I think it was an office office assistant or an OS office designation position. And now I'm the manager of that space is now like an admin program assist or something. The structure of our building, we have three professional staff in the building. Trevino brings plenty, who is Multicultural Retention Services, the Native American Student and Community Center, Student Services Coordinator.
It's
a lot of stuff there.
It's like a ledger.
Yeah. So he does, he has a mentor-mentee program. He works with first-generation students. That's kind of his focus. It's a smaller group, but they're a very tight-knit group, and a lot of his students also work for me. And then the other person in our building is Yolanda Salguero. She is programming coordinator, so she works with students to do programming through the year.
What kind of programs are you?
Well, with hers, since she's funded from the student fee, fees, there's only certain things that she's allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all student-focused, student-led. So she has a programming team. They meet, they come up with ideas, and they try to collaborate and work with other people. So she does. She is able to bring in community at mm-hmm. times, but a lot of it is student-led. So she has to guide a lot of things and support as much as possible. So students are always first and focused mm-hmm. on. Which is awesome. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really cool things that come out of those of that program. We recently just had an open mic.
Nice.
Yeah, and that was open to the community. All the events are free and open to the public.
At the center, right? Mm-hmm. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, all the ones that we do.
Yeah.
We do rent out the space, so they bring their own programming. And then there's me, and I'm the manager of the building. I oversee the building. I oversee all the students. I've got 20 students that I work with. I oversee just the coordination of people renting the space because the building is an auxiliary building, much like the hotel and the Viking Pavilion.
Okay.
We're also revenue generating, so we have to kind of generate revenue to kind of help fund our building. So we rent out space in the building. We rent out the big main room, which is really the crown jewel, I guess. It's really popular space and classrooms and meeting rooms and stuff like that. So we do that, and that's what our staff works on. In addition to that, we have an eco roof. So there's actually like a rooftop garden
there.
Yeah, it is really cool. Nice. And Indigenous Nation Studies uses it for their class curriculum. A lot of volunteer stuff comes out of that. It's a lot of responsibility because it's an actual rooftop garden. It's not like an eco roof or it's like the eco roof, I think, is like you can only have so much depth of soil and it's like specialized soil. Whereas an eco roof, the one that we have, is like a foot and a half or 3 feet deep or something like that. And we can have like regular soil, rooftop soil. And trees grow up there.
I was going to say, would you have like vegetables and stuff?
Not so much vegetables. It's more like native plants to this region that we try to keep up there. Indigenous Nation Studies, Judy Bluehorse Skelton is the one that kind of oversees. And we kind of make sure that she's included every step of the way with everything that happens on that rooftop garden. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
And do you do anything too? Is it mostly the students?
It's mostly students. Mm-hmm. I have 3 students right now who are doing rooftop garden and landscaping. Mm-hmm. And so we try to manage a lot of that stuff. It's a lot of work though. And all of our students, all the staff that I have, except for one, is all work study dependent. So as soon as the work study runs out, then the position ends, and it makes reliable staffing a little bit tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, it's a really cool space. I enjoy the heck out of it. I'm very glad that I picked up the position because I'm having a lot of fun and just working with the students every single day and see them progress from when they first got there to when they graduate is a really cool thing to see.
When students first come to you and, you know, to the center, what do you see are the biggest needs that they need from the center? Or is it mostly support? Is it emotional? Is it what are the biggest needs?
Well, aside from the financial need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, naturally. Yeah,
that's always going to be
always,
a thing.
Yeah.
A lot of these students are coming in aren't from Portland.
Mm-hmm.
They're either from one of the reservations in this area, from the 9 federally recognized tribes, and that's a couple hours, an hour or two, even further. And some are coming from other reservations or just outside of Portland, so other states and mm-hmm. stuff. So when they come here, they don't know a whole lot of people. They don't feel like they really fit in mm-hmm. a lot of times. And so hopefully when they come to our building, we try to be very inclusive. We say hi to everybody, make sure that we start to know each other when they come in and just kind of recognize them when they pop in and pop out. We try to support them, include them in all of our programming. We're definitely trying that a lot more since I've been there anyway, mm-hmm. being a lot more inclusive. We really opened up our social media channels as well. So Facebook and Instagram is what we're using now, and trying to get the word out for events and just letting people know that it's not just for Native students.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are our focus, yeah, but we also have the Pacific Islander Club in our building. So I guess I should just take a step back. There are 4 student groups housed in our building, which there is the United Indigenous Students in Higher Education, which is Yushi, Healing Feathers, which I think this is their last year. There is Student Suicide Prevention Student Group, ACES, which is American Indian Science and Engineering Society, and then Pacific Islander Club.
And these are all student ran?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
all student
fantastic.
Ran, yeah. Yeah.
Good for them.
So they have their own programming too. They all have their own budgets. They have their own leadership teams, and they bring in a lot of programming, and they partner with a lot of community to do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Go Gutters.
Yeah. Definitely. It's like I said, it's really exciting to see these students pick up the just what they have and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm just infinitely proud of all the stuff that they do. Yeah. Because, I mean, I graduated from college probably about 2 years ago. I didn't have this kind of a center.
Yeah, I was wondering, it's going to be my question.
Yeah. So NAU has a Native American center, but I didn't feel very included when I went there.
Hmm.
Just because nobody really said hi to me, no one included me on certain things. So I didn't really go over there very much. Which is probably a shame, and I definitely probably could have put a little bit more effort into it. But the fact that I didn't have that, I felt like maybe I missed out on a whole lot of things. Maybe I would have felt a little bit more a part of the community up there.
Mm-hmm.
So with that perspective, it's like, okay, what did I do, and how can I now make sure that the person who's doing the same thing that I
mm-hmm.
did,
yeah.
how do we reach them, you know?
Yeah,
so,
that experience.
Yep, exactly. Hmm. So we're just doing the best we can.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Whenever you walk around in grocery store and stuff, do you just smile and say hi to everyone now? Is it like
it's starting to be.
Yeah.
People start to notice and remember you from events, because I meet so many people mm-hmm. during events, and I'm a little bummed out to say that I don't remember every single person who comes through. I'm trying.
Naturally.
Yeah, but it's tough because we have events like every other day, and there's from new organizations that we've never worked with before, and they start to recognize me outside, and I'm just like, oh, hey, how you doing? You know, it's like I recognize the face. I just can't put a name to the face sometimes until like maybe they have like the third event there, and then we're like, okay, cool. I know you. This
just
is awesome. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Tammy, and you are tuned into KBOO's special programming called Genocide Cover-Up Day. The interview you are listening to is me, Tammy, speaking with Robert Franklin of the Native American Student and Community Center at PSU. Next up, we're going to hear from Robert about the community center and how the students and community both bring their own perspective to it, and how essentially we all become better because of it. So again, thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Tammy. This is KBOO Community Radio's Genocide Cover-Up Special Programming. Thank you.
Yo. Last call, was there any more left to settle that you can be compensated with?
What kind of events do they have at the center? Is it Native-based, or what kind of events?
There are some. There's definitely a focus for the Native-based stuff, and there's an older generation of Native community that like to see, like, cultural stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which is amazing and awesome. And then there's this newer generation with the students that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the older generation, they're very protective
mm-hmm.
of what they do, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
Their experience with Portland in general has been
yeah.
just people trying to take. And then this newer generation, it's a different Portland that they're working with a little
Interesting.
Bit.
Interesting, yeah.
And I noticed that they want to share a little bit more. It's just these two need to work together.
It's fascinating.
It is.
Wow.
It's really interesting to see happen. But it's something that we've noticed. That programming, it does happen sometimes. And there's sometimes I see programming where it's like they don't want outsiders.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree. There should be programming and space set aside
mm-hmm.
for those types of things. And I think they can do that with their tribe or with whatever community thing that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just we are very much part of PSU, and so they sometimes want to bring that here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our building, I don't think, was really set up for that. It was always supposed to be student and community.
So now that you're seeing that, what's your personal opinion about the difference in age groups and almost cultural differences?
I guess my perspective on that is basically it's this Native community, mm-hmm. and there's a missing part to that conversation that people don't know very much yet, and that is the history of how this nation is today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that history isn't taught in schools yet. I mean, they're making big steps towards that. Depending on which state you're living in. But for the most part, a lot of people who, especially here in Portland, don't know the history of the place. They don't know that there's 9 federally recognized tribes. And that's not even including the unfederally recognized tribes. They don't know that Portland is here and there's people here who benefited directly from that kind of genocide, mm-hmm. and taking of land and cultures and removing people, displacing people, setting them up on reservations. I feel like those details are left off, and even at PSU, kind of left out of the classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something passed recently that they were going to start pushing that curriculum a little bit more. So I'm excited to see what the next generation is going to.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
But yeah, so that conversation is missing, and so. With that older generation wanting to preserve and keep and take, like I said, they come from this era of just people wanting to take so much from them.
Yeah.
And so I get it and I understand it.
Interesting.
And I understand that some cultural knowledge is sacred and should be shared appropriately when they feel like they should, or include whoever they feel that they should. So I get that. And then this newer generation... just wants it. They need to understand and learn from the older generation.
Naturally, yep.
But at the same time, they are doing really exciting and amazing things with the tools that they have,
mm-hmm.
now, because information and messaging and storytelling has become this whole different thing. Our marketing team is using Photoshop, Illustrator, Audition. KBOO has given us equipment to do our own podcasts now.
Nice.
So I have a couple of students who are doing podcasts, and I'm very excited because they're sharing their perspectives on things. And they're part of other organizations that are also doing the same thing now. And so it's really exciting to see photography, filmmaking, graphic design, illustrations. They're doing a lot of that stuff.
So you studied graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
I know you mentioned the font thing.
Yeah.
And I just think that's so fascinating. Would you want to share that a little bit?
Yeah, totally. I would love to. Let me get on this soapbox real quick. I guess to whoever is listening to this, and whether you're guilty of this or not, but stop using papyrus to represent all Native things on flyers, posters, organizations, business cards. It's kind of crazy.
And it's the font that is... It's whatever you are imagining right now. That's exactly the font. That's exactly it.
Yeah, it's like an old-time, ancient-looking, made-to-look ancient... kind of like this papyrusy type font. It's definitely supposed to look ancient. Just recently, there was a syllabus at PSU that was like indigenous sustainability or something, and it was done in papyrus. I'm like, what the heck? And there was a website on there, so we click on the website and go to the website, and it's like Native Perspectives, all in papyrus. And I was like, oh, this is great. I mean, it's nothing new. I saw the same stuff down in Arizona when I was down there. And not only that, in our building, the plaques of the rooms that say the names of the rooms, they're all in papyrus.
That's fascinating. Do you know the history of the font? Or
so there was that SNL thing with Avatar, right?
Okay.
So they kind of dive into a little bit of that history. I think it was just a guy, I forget his name, and I learned his name at one point, but I forgot it, unfortunately. Sorry, sir. I think he was just kind of leaning into those that biblical kind of papyrus
back in those days.
Type of stuff. Now it's become like Native things, yoga, and like naturalistic I don't know, stuff.
There's the ancient wisdom.
Exactly. Yeah. So with that font, they're basically keeping Native American, indigenous cultures and people in this safe little distance in the history. You know, we're always remembered as these history things, historic things, these ancient things versus contemporary here doing stuff people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a bummer.
And it's like the little things, you know?
It totally is. It's all communications and that font unfortunately erases us from today.
I think it's interesting that, you know, now you have this younger generation and they are hip to it and they see it, you know, like you see that and you can combat it in a way that the elders wouldn't know how to, or, you know, it's just like this different type of wisdom that you bring, you know?
Yeah, no, there's some really cool things happening, especially with like language revitalization, because a lot of fonts don't support the language as it's written, which is really interesting. Some fonts and typesets are starting to change that. I saw recently that Google, I think, is working with a tribe to come up with their font. And even today now, I think Deneb Azad, you're able to get it on texting on your phones now, so it's an alternative keyboard that you can use that has all the accent marks and all the stuff.
Way to go.
Yeah.
Way to go.
It's really cool.
Because these little steps, it's communication. You take away communication, you take away the ability to communicate. Mm-hmm. You know,
yep. I mean, that was unfortunately like just the plan. Mm-hmm. That was the whole removal of the Indian language, cultures, and then now it's, blood quantum. And
where do you see the culture, the center, being in like the next 10 years?
That's a good question. That's a question that we've tried to come to and discuss, because when I took over, there were some issues just budget-wise and just making sure that we were on a solid foundation again. So I feel like we got there within that first year, and now we're starting to be more inclusive. It's starting to become more of a positive space again, trying to include everybody. And people are seeing that. People are renting the space more. We're not so much ultra tied to our budget because of our revenue. It kind of offsets and allows us to repair things that needs to be repaired without having to like worry about where the money's, like if PSU can support something like that. So now we're in this really healthy space, and now it's like, okay, what do we do for the next 5 years? What's our 5-year plan? And as much as I feel like I could probably sit down and kind of come up with something, it definitely needs to be a collaborative effort with PSU, the community, students as well, to find out where we're going. But I have a lot of hope, tons of hope. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I feel like we're on a really, really great trajectory.
You said positive. It's a positive place now. And I'm interested to know why you use that word.
It's when I first got there, there was just, a lack of attention that was given. And so that kind of leads to kind of this negative vibe sometimes. And there's an interesting thing that pops up from time to time within Native communities, and that's the government has it set up with, depending on which tribe they're a part of, there's a blood quantum thing, and then there's like descendancy.
What is that?
So it's like, I have a certificate of Indian blood for my tribe, and it says I'm 4/4 Navajo. So my parents, my dad's Navajo, my mom's full-blooded Navajo, so I'm full-blooded Navajo. So once you start to see some mixing start to happening, that blood starts to thin out, the blood, quote unquote. And so that's kind of how genocide works in this system. Once you don't have enough Indian blood in you, then you're no longer part of that tribe.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's kind of nefarious in that way. But it's the system that a lot of tribes know, and a lot of the government and policies and rules and laws are based kind of around that. And treaties. Treaties are also tied into some of that stuff as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So going back to the other stuff, you see some communities where it's like, oh, you're not Indian enough, or you're not real Indian, you know, that kind of a thing.
Wow.
And so that, in those small pockets of community, that can be very much like gatekeeping kind of like this toxic thing a little bit. So we saw there's some of that going on in the community and stuff. And
you know, I can understand that. You know, the history, like you said, the genocide, it's got to heal from that. It's all part of it. I can't even...
Yeah, no, yeah. It's still here. It's still happening. And it's some interesting stuff. Like, you'll run into some folks who are like, they don't like to be called Indian.
Mm.
They like to be either Native American or Indigenous. But apparently treaties use the language Indian. So from what my understanding was, is if you don't go by that anymore, then legally...
My goodness.
So
that's reading a little bit about like the local history with the native folks. It's the government is so tied into it, and I just I can't understand why. You know, it's like just been so politicized and so many just policies around just existing, you know, water rights. It's crazy, unbelievable treaties.
Yeah, it's all tied to land. The settlers, colonizers, they all wanted the land. There were already people on the land, so when they showed up, it was just like, okay, how do we get it?
Interesting. Wow. And it's still going on.
It's
crazy. Well, that's good that there's like that positive feeling now at the cultural center. It's all, I can imagine, all part of the healing, all part of the process.
Yeah, no, we're super excited for it. We're definitely looking into what do we do with it all now. I just heard you refer to it as a cultural center. We don't really see it that way so much. I mean, it's kind of confusing as it is on paper, and then when you look at our website, kind of tricky sometimes.
You ever think about going back to Arizona and doing something like this?
I would love to go back to Arizona. I do miss the reservation. I miss Cameron, Arizona, a lot. But there's a lot of things that I don't know that I'm learning and getting experience out here. So eventually I would love to go back and kind of jump in and try to help out where I can. I know for our government, it's a little weird right now. There's a lot of it's not how much you know, it's who you know.
Yeah, naturally.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a little bit more up front out there, because it's like there's like a clan system, and if you're a part of this clan, then it's like, okay, well, let me open the door for you, type of
interesting
thing. I don't want to say it's all like that, but I know that it does happen a lot. I know family members and friends and friends of friends, and it's interesting to see and hear. So I would love to go back. I can't wait till the day that I get back and kind of start finding my space in the community out there. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
You like it here for now?
Yeah, man, it's tough. It's tough because it's like deep down, I would love to go back, but I also know that I enjoy internet. I enjoy internet. I enjoy being able to go places that is relatively close. Whereas out there, it's like there's a gas station, there's like a trading post, maybe a couple of houses. And for the most part, what I've noticed is that the part of res that I was at, which is Tuba City and Cameron, there aren't like apartments for rent. You either have to be employed by the schools or the hospital or the government to get housing.
Make it easy.
Yeah, no. Or you have to have a family plot and buy a old trailer type of a setup. So it's different.
Yeah. Do you find students having kind of the same ideas? Because I'm sure, you know, they go to school, but after 4 years, they're like, oh, I wonder what I'm going to do with my life now.
Yeah. So I've only been here for 2 years. I've gotten to the first group of students. They were seniors, so I didn't get to know them super well.
Right, yeah.
The next generation, they just graduated this past year. Or not the next generation, but the next graduating class. They graduated, and now they're out there. And I'm seeing some of them jumping into some really cool jobs and working with governments and organizations, environmental organizations and stuff. So there's jobs there for sure, especially with this whole era now with climate change and resources becoming a little bit more scarce. I remember when I first went to college, my mom really pushed me into environmental law with an emphasis in water rights.
Smart.
Yeah, which is really exciting for me because I really love to debate and like talk about stuff and get into it. But I think that was more my mom's thing versus my thing.
Living vicariously.
Exactly. Because after a while, I was like, oh, hey, computer science. Let me jump into that real quick. And then it changed into something else that I didn't even know graphic design was a thing that I could get into. So I didn't find my way to graphic design until way later.
So where do you see yourself for the next 5 years?
I don't know. I thought I'd stick around for about 5 years.
Good.
It depends. I enjoy the heck out of the position because I get to work alongside or directly with some amazing people, some amazing organizations, and they're doing really big things and finding ways for my students to jump in and be a part of it or actually see someone move at that speed is really, really powerful.
Yeah, it's very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What would you say was, like, any ongoing or past projects that you'd say you're most proud of?
Right now, the biggest one that we have going right now is probably the podcast one, because it's new.
What's it called? Can we plug it in there?
Well, we don't have a name yet.
Oh, okay.
Brand new. My student should have a name by the time I get back to work. I gave her a deadline. So she's got three episodes ready to go. The first one, she interviewed her friend, a coworker as well, and they're kind of just native perspectives at PSU, which I'm really interested to hear. The other one, we talked with Asa Wright, an artist here in the area, MODOK.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing some really cool things. And then the third one, which was just last week, was Shailene Joseph.
Okay.
She's part of the Native Wellness Institute Indigenous 20-somethings project. And I just heard that one, and it was really cool. It's really cool.
Nice.
So, and that's going to keep going. We've got a few more that we want to get lined up and get some people in there.
That's great.
Yeah, so that's one of the projects that I'm pretty excited for right now.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
What about any personal projects?
Personal projects. Oh, man. I've got so much. My time is so wrapped up into the NASCC right now. From 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., it's there. Whatever time and whatever energy I have left after that, especially if there's not an event, then I've been working on some just, I know. I did this uranium animation, Uranium on the Navajo Nation. It was a infographic that I turned into an animation.
Cool.
So I did that, and when I was doing that, I was doing a lot of research, because it's basically a documentary animation, so I was doing a ton of research, and finding out that there's so many things that I didn't know about, and everyone else didn't know about. So with that perspective, and after that, I finished that project, and then graduating and moving here, I was like, okay, let's dive into the history here, let's get to know this place. And I spent a lot of time at the Oregon Historical Society.
Oh, they're great.
They are awesome. At the City of Portland Archives, that's thankfully located at PSU, so I can go over there on my lunch hour and just kind of dive into some history. So I'm digging into this thing where, this project where it's like acknowledging history. Right now, there's this movement of land acknowledgments happening. Unfortunately, we're seeing this trend where those land acknowledgments are becoming more just something you check off the box before your event starts, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a nice first step. However, it's becoming to the point where people are coming away from non-natives and natives are coming away from those land acknowledgments as like saying, oh, those were beautiful. That was beautiful. And I was like, well, yeah, but you should have learned something a little bit more than that, you know, that it hints at something. But we want it to be, it's supposed to be something more educational and something that resonates. We find that in that short amount of time, you get like 1 minute, maybe 5 minutes. I've heard someone actually get like 20 minutes for the land acknowledgement, which is pretty cool. And I would love to see what that looked like. But 1 to 5 minutes to acknowledge the land, which again is a really great first step. But it's kind of a coddling experience a little bit.
Just the tip of the iceberg.
It's the tip of the iceberg, and it just, once you get over that, then it's like, all right, let's go back to this this event that we are really here for, you know? So we are looking to retool ours into something that's more of like a history acknowledgement. Funny, because actually, like our president who made it, what was it, National American History Month now versus Native American Heritage Month? Or, I mean, it's still Native American Heritage Month, but he also made it this National American. Exactly. So, I mean, Native American history is National American history, you know? So we are looking at trying to find a way to retool that and make something more localized so that people will know that there's 9 fully recognized tribes here, that there's kind of a quick thing, and it's a lot of history. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, we are making up for the lack of schooling.
that's an undertaking.
Yeah. So we're trying to figure out a way to do that. And right now, we just started talking about it. It looks like there's some support from some places here in Portland to come up with something. We just need to start having those conversations. I've already done like a quick rough draft mock-up of something. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for that one.
Do you have a location, the first location you like to do it, or?
Not really. Right now, everything's just on paper, or actually on an Illustrator document. So yeah, it'll look something. It looks really cool.
Nice.
But it could be something else. And I hope it finds funding and we can actually do something a little bit bigger, because it's
fantastic.
Got some pretty cool people attached to it.
Yeah. Well, that's an undertaking, you know, really getting, like you said, educating people and this whole thing that they were never really exposed to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't know. Just they all come to Portland because it's a pretty cool place to live now, you know? Mm-hmm. And the kind of just gentrification that's going on, and they get here and they know that life.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what was here before.
Yeah.
So.
And there's so much here, and it's so good that there are, you know, people like you that are like reviving it, and especially for students, which I think are, you know, they're not like fragile or anything, but they're definitely in a time where, you know, they're in a new place. They feel, you know, like they aren't, like they don't belong somewhere, and it's like just really good that they have that support of people who look like them that can be like, hey, it's all good, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's really good, you know. I wish I had that going to school, and I'm glad to know that you didn't have that experience, but now you can pay it forward with just trying to get people, you know, just sharing that knowledge and all.
Yeah, we definitely try to make it a community with a true collaboration. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm from Arizona. I'm not from here. I definitely try to create these platforms where people from here, mm-hmm. or definitely the tribes from here, can actually get up and tell their own stories. And I want them to be a part of that process as much as possible. Mm. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for all the work that you do and for agreeing to speak with me. Any kind of last thoughts you'd like to...
Nothing off the top of my head. Stop using papyrus.
You have any advice for, you know, maybe like people about to graduate high school or something and they're kind of scared to take that next move and don't know really what they're doing?
Oh, geez. it looks daunting at first, but once you get out there and start doing the work, man, the rewards, the benefits from just your presence in those spaces is monumental. I'm so excited for the next era. I'm so excited because now they have all these tools. They have these kind of perspectives. They have their story intact, and they're going to do some amazing things. And once we're kind of on this tipping point where people are starting to become aware of mm-hmm. certain things, and in my personal experience, I've had nothing but support from mm-hmm. everyone I've reached out to, and I know that that's just going to make the place a lot better for everyone else.
Yeah.
Easy,
better transition when you have, you know, support.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And hope we all keep building communities and, you know, helping each other out, and I appreciate you being here.
Hey, thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This is part of KABU's special programming for Genocide Cover-Up Day. That was my interview with Robert Franklin. He's the manager of the Native American Student and Community Center at PSU. it is a multicultural and multi-use area, so if you are ever interested in doing something there, please go ahead and hit them up. Their information is online. Again, it is the Native American Student and Community Center. I'd really like to thank Robert for agreeing to speak with me, and thank you to everyone at the Student and Community Center for all the work that you do for the Native community, Indigenous community, the Portland community, and the students at PSU. For KABU, this is Tammy.
If I stay too close to the edge, I will lose control. Pull me in so I can't set forth. I'm not home yet, so I'm still going for gold. Zehta digino nachandasya nehiran et edolil nehidognit yasni kudilki chetin bolu oneski sutun unki haz ankhwe nzakis bolu dolil Nahat aholodolil, I naholodolil, sihasan edo holodolil.
How wanna de go, how wanna de? So there's a be how wanna, I na be how wanna. So I know it began to show that they didn't get it in my car. How wanna they go, how wanna they? Inta hakes be how wanna, na hata be how wanna. So na we beke ho jo, ta de dinge hit in ma ka go. How wanna they go, how wanna they? Yo wanna he, ne ne. How wanna they go, how wanna they? So there's a be how wanna, in a be how wanna. So now we begin to show, how they didn't get it in my car go. How wanna they go, how wanna they? Yo wanna he, ne ne, yo wanna he. Na ze le be se la wa wa, so de ze be se la wa wa. How wanna they go, how wanna they? Inta he kes be how wanna, na hata be how wanna. So now we begin to show that they didn't get it in my cargo. How wanna they go? How wanna they? How wanna they go? So there's a be how wanna, in a be how wanna. So now we begin to show that they didn't get it in my cargo. How wanna they go? How wanna they? Yo wanna he, yo wanna he, yo wanna he, ne ne. Na ze le be se la wa wa, so de zen be se la wa wa. How wanna they go, oh, how wanna they?
Hawana de go, Hawana de. Inza hekes be Hawano, Nahata be Hawano, Sawana we bege hojo, Tade dinge heke makago. Hawana de go, Hawana de. Hawana de go, Hawana de. Yo wana he.
You've been listening to KBOO's interview with Robert Franklin, the manager of the Native American Student Community Center located at PSU. That was followed by the Navajo Early Morning Blessing and the Navajo Healing Song. Coming up next at 11 o'clock, it's Between the Covers, where host David Naiman speaks with poet Jake Skeets on his debut collection of poetry titled Eyes Bottle Dark with a Mouthful of Flowers, an examination of toxic masculinity through the lens of queer Indigenous Southwesterner.
KBOO is having our annual book and record sale Saturday, December 21st from 12 to 10 p.m. There's a special member-only preview hour from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. The sale will be located at Jupiter Next in the Arium Ballroom at 900 East Burnside Street. KBOO is currently accepting donations of used and good condition books, records, CDs, and cassette tapes. KBOO is hosting sorting parties for this event on Friday, December 6th and Friday, December 13th at 5 to 7 p.m. at KBOO's 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. If you're able to help with sorting or help on the day of the sale, please contact volunteer at kboo.org. We hope to see y'all there.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Requiem for a Rogue, Portland debut and benefit on Saturday, November 30th from 9 p.m. to midnight at the Atlantis Lounge in Portland. This is the Portland debut of Dan Kaufman's band's Modern Western Opera and a benefit to stop a fossil fuel pipeline in Oregon. Requiem for the Rogue tells the fictional story of a Southern Oregon landowner who runs afoul of a modern-day Sheriff of Nottingham, who is in cahoots with a fossil fuel pipeline company. Again, that's Requiem for the Rogue, Portland debut and benefit on Saturday, November 30th from 9 p.m. to midnight at the Atlantis Lounge at Mississippi Pizza, 3552 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You don't own the water.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 11 o'clock. Time for Between the Covers with host David Naiman.
Good morning and welcome to Between the Covers. I'm David Naiman, your host. Today's guest is the poet Jake Skeets. Skeets is a graduate of the MFA program at the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico. His poetry and prose have appeared in Plowshares, The Rumpus, Word Riot, Waxwing, Yellow Medicine Review, World Literature Today, and at the Poetry Society of America, among many others. Skeets edits Cloudthroat, an online magazine for Native, First Nations, and Indigenous writing and art. He also organizes the Poetry Salon and reading series Pollen Tongue, is a member of the Diné Writers Collective, and teaches at Diné College in Arizona. Jake Skeets is here today on Between the Covers to talk about his debut collection of poetry published by Milkweed.